It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. I'd like to welcome you to this program. Lots to share today. We're going to begin by taking a look at how we can rejuvenate our intestines by enhancing our digestion with ferments. And I'm sure many of you have already used some fermented products, but I'll go through a whole list of them. And what one person was doing, Rose Atchison, about helping her family. A lot of good there. Also, the latest on berries. A lot of good stuff coming out on berries, and rightly so. So we'll give you the latest on that. My guest today, following Health and Nutrition, will be Professor Carl Grossman. And we're going to talk about why we believe that Professor James Hansen is doing a big push for nuclear. In fact, he was on with Elliot Spitzer the other day on Current TV, and they were both cheerleading that it's clean, it doesn't contribute to global warming, it's efficient, the Chinese are using it, they're building a whole bunch of new plants, 44 new plants. Therefore, this is a good thing Obama's doing, giving the largest amount of money in history of our government, meaning we the taxpayers, in support of clean, renewable energy like nuclear. How could they get it so wrong? But they did. So we'll explore that. Then following that, on our environmental segment, I'll talk about what the House did today in a backdoor attempt to force tar sand pipeline approval. They passed an amendment that ties in funding and approval of this with all of our infrastructures, like improving our roads and bridges and public transit that we need done. So that's what they're doing. You weren't aware of that? You'll know about it. And then a little in-depth look at how rural America got fracked. The environmental nightmare you know nothing about. Ellen Cantrow from TomDispatch.com. And I'm going to share this with you because in my travels, time and again, if you're going across America, you'll get to the top of a hill and there'll be kind of like a bucolic scene in front of you. Very pastoral. You'll see cows grazing. You'll see old dairy barns. And that's the way it used to be. Today, sometimes for 15 miles out, you can see 400-foot-high windmills, wind power generators. Ugly, noisy, and when you're at least a quarter mile away, you can hear the swooshing noise. Imagine living right beside that. And then you pass houses, whole villages surrounded by these. Now they've added another thing, the hydrofracking, and it's taking off. I know people who want to go up to Wisconsin, a great place, beautiful state, nice people. Think again, no longer would I buy anything in Wisconsin, because that's where I'm going to take you today. And I'm going to show you what happens when people start mining for the pure form of crystalline silica. Its grains, perfectly rounded, are strong enough to resist the extreme pressures of the technology called hydraulic fracturing, which pumps vast quantities of that sand and water and chemicals, many of which are carcinogenic, into the shell formations to force out small amounts of methane and what we call natural gas. So guess what we're including in our push nationally under this administration? You guessed it, natural gas. Yeah, natural? There's nothing natural about hydrofracking upon the environment. I'll show you what's happening to thousands of communities around Wisconsin and why you should pay attention to this. Then, time permitting, processed foods. Do people really know what's wrong with processed foods? I'll give you 9 things you need to know about your food if it's been processed, from Martha Rosenberg. And I don't know that I'll have time today, but I intend to take on the educational concept in this society that we need to replace all of our public schools with private schools, for-profit schools, or charter schools. I challenge that, and I'll explain why. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. And by the way, for those of you, and I realize that many of you don't have computers, a lot of our senior citizens don't, and they also can't always be in home where they have a radio they can listen. The good news is that no matter where you're at in North America, that includes Canada, anytime you want, you can just pick up a phone and listen to this program over the telephone. Let me give you that number, 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066. And I've had thousands of people in this audience who sent notes, and thank you for letting them know, and cab drivers and people who just, boom, they can get that right on. Ulcers, well, I remember the first person who I counseled about ulcers. He was a former city editor for the New York Tribune. His name was Guy Richards, and he came from that old-fashioned, really dogged reporter, highly ethical, hardworking, highly literate, very knowledgeable person. And he's sitting across me, and he was in his 60s, and I was in my 20s. And he says, look, I've been to all these doctors. I'm under a lot of stress. I'm under a lot of time restraints. I'm under a lot of pressure. That isn't going to change. But I was told by a woman, Mrs. Speller, who's a friend of mine, that you had some stuff that might help me. I said, well, I don't know if it will or not, but it's worth trying. Doesn't cost you anything. And there's no side effect. He's all right, he said, because I've got bleeding ulcers. I asked him to make some cabbage juice and drink it three times a day, raw cabbage juice. But then I asked him also to have that with some kombucha, which is a fermented tea, and twice a day. And he thought it was all nonsense, but he said, okay, that's it. I said, that's it. 4 weeks later, he gives me a call. He said, son of a gun, it worked. First time in 15 years, no pain, no meds. And as long as I knew him thereafter, which is the next 15 years, I think he lived to in his 80s, he would always tell that story to people. Well, now we have to start looking at how we can put naturally fermented foods into our system, because not only will they help us with ulcers, but they also help heal inflammation in the intestine. If you only knew how many tens of millions of Americans have inflammation in their intestines and stomach, in no small measure because we drink coffee as a society. Now, where the organic green coffee bean has caffeic and acids in it that are very beneficial, that is completely different than having a cup of coffee, but they try to make it one and the same, just as they did when the French had the French paradox. They had a high-fat dairy diet, yet they did not have the high cardiovascular death rate and conditions that in America we had. And the reason was because threefold. A, French farmers were really resistant against anything other than organic fresh produce for their family. B, everyone's home who I went into in France in the countryside had large amounts of fruit and grapes on the table in season. And three, they all had their own private little vineyards, small vineyards, not very big. One little house I went into, and it was just a very modest house, had 12,000 bottles. The guy had grown the grapes and fermented them and then bottled them himself, low alcohol content, but very rich. And no, they weren't for sale. They traded them and used them themselves. People specialized in making their own wine. And so you'd see wine at virtually every meal, not to get drunk, just because it was the way we would drink water. Now, when you study that they were eating a high degree of fresh-grown organic fruits and vegetables, they were outside working throughout the day, and they were flooding the body with antioxidants and phytonutrients, and one specific one, resveratrol, which was in the grapes. It's in the grape skin and the grape seed. And then they were taking other things, what are called proanthocyanidins in the grape seed, because their grapes have seeds in them. And when you crush up that grape seed, it releases some very powerful healing nutrients. That's why grape seed extract is such a magnificent nutrient. That's what happened. Now, somehow, healthy lifestyle was morphed into have two glasses of alcohol a day, any kind of alcohol, vodka, scotch, you know, rum, bourbon, doesn't matter, 80 proof, 100 proof, just have two a day. The insanity of that, and yet that's what happened, which actually was causing cardiomyopathy, which is a weakening of the heart muscle, and massive oxidative stress against the liver, the heart, the brain, the eyes. So we did it just backwards. So when you eat an extract or consume an extract of the green coffee bean, that is completely different than taking a regular coffee bean that is one of the most pesticide, heavily sprayed items in nature, roasting it, killing off the antioxidants, creating an acrylamide, which is a known cancer-causing agent, and then making it highly acidic, and then that causes gastric reflux, and it burns the stomach and in the intestine, makes you very anabolic, which you don't want. So, when you are trying to rebalance all this, fermentation makes a difference. And kombucha, kombucha, B-U-C-H-A, kombucha, it's a fermented tea. Non-dairy yogurt is also good, but when you see how many bacteria are actually in the yogurt, it's just a tiny amount. So I don't even consider that anymore. Much better to take the capsules or a strain of living bacteria starting at between 3 billion and 10 billion good bacteria per session. I would say twice a day, unless you have Crohn's disease or ileitis, colitis, spastic colon, diverticulitis, ulcers, then you'd want it three times a day. But also, if you eat tempeh, which is a traditional Indonesian food made from fermented soybeans, that's very high in... And a particular type of black enzyme, if you look at it, it grows, it has kind of a almost a cottony white look on it. Doesn't look very appetizing. And that's called a mycelium. But that takes about, I guess, 30 hours to incubate. At the end of that process, you get a texture very similar to meat. And it's very rich in vitamin B12 and protein, and it's very easy to digest. And, of course, now they make it in different ways to make it tasty. By the way, for those of you who are trying to shift from a meat-based diet to a vegan diet, but you're used to having the meat, take some portobello mushrooms. Take a sponge and clean the top. Now, people say, oh, you know, you don't add water, just, you know, wipe them. Well, why don't you do this? Why don't you just check to see how many bacteria you have after you've wiped them from all the hands that have touched them and how much bacteria is underneath, depending upon the medium it was grown in, because it's all infected. So anyhow, what you do, you wash off the top and then you cut off that little black spongy part on the bottom. You just cut it off and trim the edges. So what you're dealing with then is a light-skinned, thick, about the size of a piece of bread, and then you quarter that, and or you make it into little cubes, and then that will have the same consistency as chicken or meat, but it's really good for you. And then when you heat it, especially with olive oil or coconut oil, it releases its wonderful immune-stimulating anti-cancer properties. Now, another fermented product that I really recommend, especially for those of you who are a little under the weather, is miso, M-I-S-O. It's a fermented paste, and it's made from all types of grains. You can have the mildest, the one I enjoy most, is from barley. It's a light miso. But you can also get a darker miso from soybean or from rice. It's very traditional in the Japanese diet. They make all kinds of sauces from it. And the fermented foods go through a lot of different changes, and it helps you on every level. So you can help. Here's some things that take away message. Probiotics and fermentation. By the way, sauerkraut's good also. One of the best. It's one of the most perfect foods in nature. It can help prevent colon cancer and osteoarthritis. It improves the detoxification function of your liver. It lowers your serum cholesterol, especially the HDL, or excuse me, LDL. It can help stimulate bone growth. It lowers blood pressure. It is strongly anti-carcinogenic. And I've given it to people to help them with herpes. So there's a lot of things you can do. Now, if you want to boost it, add some vitamin C. So that's the best on that. Now, another thing I want to get to before we go to my guest in a moment is why I believe that we should pay attention to dealing with what doesn't work in our life instead of focusing all the time on what does. I quietly have attended just to see what was being said and what the presentation was. Some people are strong motivational speakers, and almost without exception, it's cheerleading to do, and absolutely nothing's wrong with what they're suggesting. I think they're right on point, and I commend them on that. Of looking for the best in all things, that's good. But I have never seen anyone in my life who looked for the best and did the best without also having the courage to turn around and walk in the direction of their conditioned self. And just look, take their time, and with patience, without judgment, just look at the consequences of what happens every time they react. And the power of that conditioned mind to sabotage them or whatever they've done or relationships or anything else. So I believe it has to be a combination of the two. Now, I have found in working with individuals that if you just focus upon what is positive, positive affirmations, prayer, journal writing, quiet time in nature, all of which are important, that will help the person momentarily. But the second that person is reminded of where they come from or what hasn't changed, bam, there it goes back. And then you get this volatility of going back and forth and back and forth, and everything becomes dualistic. When you deal honestly with the past and you reconcile that you understand it and where it came from and how it manifested, so you're not going to engage it, then pure strength of will, more than anything else, and determinate insight allows you to stay in a positive mindset. Then what I found happens is that the person's brain function begins to improve. Why? Because they're secreting more oxytocin. Therefore, you're coming into everything with a sense of real appreciation and joy. And in that moment of appreciation and joy, you're secreting oxytocin. For example, just being able to spend quality time with a dog or a cat or a bird, or just be with friends where you can laugh and find joy and happiness. To see a comedy, laughing stimulates positive hormones. That's what's important. So we're not always looking over our shoulder, thinking what bad's going to happen, what am I going to lose, how should I respond, always coming from fear or insecurity. And then you're not secreting oxytocin, you're secreting cortisol. And that works just the opposite. That speeds up your aging. That kills you. Here's the latest study on this. This is from Yale University today. Quote, oxytocin improves brain function in children with autism. Preliminary results of an ongoing large-scale study at Yale School of Medicine, researchers showed that oxytocin, the natural occurring substance produced in the brain throughout the body, increased brain function in regions that are known to process social information in children and adolescents with autism spectrum disorder. Our findings provide the first critical steps towards devising more effective treatments for the core social benefits in autism, which may involve a combination of clinical interventions with administration of oxytocin. Such a treatment approach will fundamentally improve our understanding of autism in the treatment. So, just remember, when you're thinking positive thoughts, when you're showing positive emotions, happiness, joy, creativity, when you're excited about something in a good way, your brain chemistry is doing the right thing for you. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment with our guest. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Last Tuesday, I was giving a commentary, and I mentioned that I believe that China was going to have a substantial decrease in its gross domestic product. I predicted around 5%, 5 to 5.5, because it is in an economic bubble that no one in the West seems to be paying attention to, and it will impact them. This is today, just out. Quote, real estate crash in China, foreign funding down 80%, land sales down 57%, starts down 27%. This is from Business Insider. Quote, inquiring minds are reading an excellent report, China Real Estate Unravels, by Patrick Chovanec, a professor at the University School of Economics and Management in Beijing. The report confirms many of the things I've said would happen in regards to Chinese real estate bubble and gross domestic product. Here are a few. Developers burdened by 70% leverage ratios and loans threatening to come due, rush to complete projects already in their pipeline to put those units onto the market and raise cash. That rush to complete inflated real estate, allegedly up 23% in the first quarter. Other statistics from the report tell the real story. Year-end sales down 14%. Residential property sales down 17%. Office sales down 10%. Since January, February, were disaster falling 21% overall. A total amount of floor space available up 35%, which is a bad thing. Floor space of residential areas increased about 47%. That's really bad. And so what this is saying in this report is that what I said last week is absolutely true. And here's what he says. Chinese gross domestic product should be about 5.3%. So, ahead of the curve on that one. And that's why you're going to see a whole lot of different things happening in China. I mentioned, before we go to my guest who's standing by, I mentioned that we should be challenging our legislators not to support the Keystone Tar Sands Pipeline. But behind closed doors today, that would have been on Friday, the House of Representatives passed a backdoor attempt that would force lawmakers to approve the Keystone Tar Sands Pipeline as part of an unrelated transportation bill, once again holding the legislation for improving our roads, bridges, and public transit hostage to partisan ideology. So we need to let our legislators say no, no to all efforts to support the pipeline. It's bad at every level. And finally, when a lot of people get together from different groups, and by the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, they contact their lawmakers, and I'm suggesting at the state level now, call your state legislators and tell them that you will not vote for them ever again, and you'll work against them if they support ALEC, going to any more of their meetings to drop out. Because if they don't do that, then all they are is a pawn of ALEC, and ALEC is the American Legislative Exchange Council. That is a group of the most powerful corporations in the world, and they meet with our state legislators twice a year and give the state legislators bills they want to have passed as state laws, but never with their name, that they have written it, that it helps special interest groups. So your lawmakers at the state level go into these state houses and say, this is the bill we want, and that's how they've been doing it with over 800 bills in just the last 2 years alone. Here's the good news. This comes from Nation of Change. Quote, 11 more lawmakers drop ALEC. Quote, in the last 2 months, 16 companies and other institutional supporters of the American Legislative Exchange Council announced they would part ways with the organization, likely costing the conservative group hundreds of thousands of dollars in annual funding. Similarly, several dozen lawmakers broke ties with ALEC due to a progressive campaign highlighting the organization's harmful impact on state lawmaking. ALEC drafts and promotes model conservative legislation, including bills disenfranchising and the so-called stand-your-ground laws that may shield Martin's killer, George Zimmerman, from justice. Today, 11 more state lawmakers announced they would no longer associate with ALEC. And then it goes into who these were. Listen what it says here. Okay? Progressive campaign. That's us. So we have been helping to get the word out on KPFK, our sister station in Los Angeles, every week, and here on our stations as often as possible. So please continue to write and call your state lawmakers saying, renounce your association with ALEC. That's something we have the power to do, so please do that. So a call to action and making a difference. My guest, Professor Carl Grossman, is a professional in the area of communicating, investigating, writing, and teaching on important environmental issues. And he's been doing this for over 30 years. He's one of the nation's most prolific investigative journalists on nuclear power, politics, and the energy industry, and the environment. And this year he received, rightly so, the prestigious Pope Award for his many articles written during the past year. And you can read his articles on sites like Alternet and Common Dreams and the Huffington Post. He also is the author of Cover Up, What You're Not Supposed to Know About Nuclear Power, and The Wrong Stuff, The Space Program's Nuclear Threat to Our Planet. He also narrated the award-winning TV documentary 3 Mile Island, Revisited, and The Push to Revive Nuclear Power. Nice to have you with us today, Carl.
A pleasure, Gary.
Carl, the other night, and you're on this newsmaker segment for a simple reason. I was watching Dr. Hansen, Dr. James Hansen, a man who has done so much, and I have a great deal of respect for his work, especially when it came to showing that clean coal is an oxymoron. It doesn't exist. And yet, one of the ways President Obama got elected and one of the major funding beneficiaries of his clean coal is the coal industry. And especially in my area of the world where I grew up and lived in Appalachia, I lived in Weirton, I lived in Wheeling, I lived in Parkersburg and Steubenville. So that's where a lot of this is done. And yet he was out there. I mean, he's the kind of guy I like. He just doesn't talk it like yourself. He walks it, putting himself in harm's way. I told someone over the weekend, if you're not willing to get yourself arrested, then get out of the discussion. All right, I'm really fed up with people who talk about it, something on an it's very safe intellectual level. Could spend hours bending your ear, but then you ask them, so you're going to come with us, stand shoulder to shoulder? No. Well, then why are we having this conversation? When you find your courage, come back and let's have a conversation. And I no longer bear the fool's well that I once was willing to make excuses for and tolerate because, well, you know, they're there behind us. Can you see them? Get a pair of binoculars and see how far behind you they are. Well, for those people willing to stand out there and get themselves arrested, get themselves online, Hansen is one of those unique American heroes because he also was top person over at NASA and was the first major government insider to go on the record about how global warming and what was causing global warming, greenhouse gases, and what was causing greenhouse gases, but at that time it was mainly fossil fuels. And then here he was, and I just couldn't believe what he said with Elliot Spitzer. Now, Spitzer can say almost anything and get away with it because he's not an expert on anything that is relevant to the environment. In law, yeah, he's a gifted lawyer and was a very gifted attorney general, and I respect his work when he went after Wall Street. Good for him. And I personally believe, though I don't believe he has the courage, but he has the resource to find out, how the people on Wall Street nailed him. There's no way in the world that what happened to him would have happened if it weren't a setup. But that's for him to deal with, not us. In any case, here's Hansen advocating nuclear power, advocating, along with Elliot, that it's a good thing, that it's clean, that it's not contributing to greenhouse gases, and that it's economic, and that the Chinese are doing it. And they have, I remember him saying specifically, the Chinese don't have an economic or political agenda when it comes to. They're far more realistic in looking just at what works. So they're not going to be supporting wind and solar. They're going to be supporting, as they were, they're going to support much more efficient nuclear. 44 new plants. And I thought, I've got to address this. So the forum is yours. If you would please share with us, without any condemnation of Dr. Hansen, because on this issue we share a difference of opinion, but on so many other issues we're right in alignment. But share with our audience where you believe there is another position that maybe Mr. Hansen and Elliot Spitzer should consider before they start promoting nuclear. The forum is yours.
Well, I too respect Dr. Hansen's perspective and early involvement when it comes to global warming, but in his embrace of nuclear power, he is highly misinformed. For example, here's an interview with him with Treehugger, where he says, this is after Fukushima, the safety record of nuclear power has been exceptional, even taking account Fukushima, which hasn't as yet killed anyone from radiation, and Chernobyl. I mean, a very important work published in 2009 by the New York Academy of Sciences, Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment, by a team of European scientists, conclude that the deaths, this is based on now available medical data between the year of the accident, 86, and 2004, 985,000 deaths attributable to the fallout from Chernobyl. As to Fukushima, because you have six nuclear plants and spent fuel pools, and those plants and those pools leaking and just generating all sorts of radioactivity, which has gone into the environment, they're going to be probably, this is independent scientists speaking, including Dr. Alexei Yablokov, who was the lead scientist on the book on Chernobyl, you're going to have significantly more than a million people dead. Furthermore, Dr. Hansen speaks about nuclear power. Here's an interview with Dr. Hansen where he says nuclear power is quite inexpensive. It's not inexpensive. A nuclear power plant costs $13 to $15 billion, with a B, billion dollars these days. Indeed, that's why they're not being built anywhere by private people. It has to be done by government or with government support. In this country now, it's all predicated on taxpayer-based loan guarantees. And talking about cost, consider this is beyond the lost lives in coming years, the property damage in the area around Fukushima. When we're talking about an area that'll be rendered uninhabitable for millennia, we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars in terms of property damage. Furthermore, Dr. Hansen says, well, maybe the current generation of nuclear power plants hasn't worked out perfectly, but he's talking about the fourth generation. The fourth generation. Well, one of the big players in the so-called fourth generation of nuclear power plants is the fast breeder reactor based on plutonium. And we don't have to go to a fourth generation, which is many decades away. Hopefully it'll never happen, to see what a fast breeder can bring. For example, back to Japan, they built a fast breeder called Manju, which had a catastrophic fire in 1995. It never got back online. The French Super Phoenix nuclear power plant with 7 tons of plutonium, described as the most toxic substance, period. That had an accident, a major accident in 1996. I mean, it's been shut down. The new generation of nuclear plants, the so-called generation four, the proposed new generation, is, I mean, where we have to go, and this is what Dr. Hansen, unfortunately, doesn't seem to understand, safe, clean, renewable energy technologies, which in fact are here today, ready to be utilized. And just to extend his misinformation, China last year, again, this is the third year in a row, led all countries in annual wind power gains. This is a report from the Earth Policy Institute. In fact, last year, 41,000 megawatts of new wind electric generating capacity was brought online. That's the equivalent to 41 nuclear power plants. Total wind energy total these days is 250,000. That's 250 nuclear plants. That's where we have to go. And one last thing, in terms of, and this is right to the heart of Hansen's argument, Hansen says, well, nuclear power plants don't emit greenhouse gases, so they're good in terms of global warming. What Dr. Hansen is not saying, and others promoting, still promoting nuclear power, claiming it'll be good for global warming are not saying is when you look at the nuclear cycle, mining, milling, fuel enrichment, and so forth, it's a major contributor of greenhouse gases. It does add to global warming. It's solar and wind and tidal and wave power and geothermal and all these safe, clean energy technologies, which we must work with great vigor now to expand their use and to get online. Those are the clean energy sources. Those are the sources that don't contribute to global warming. So I wish Dr. Hansen would learn a little bit more about nuclear power and keep challenging global warming, but go to the proper recipe, the proper alternative to global warming, which is renewable, safe, clean energy technologies.
Carl, I agree with that. What I would suggest is that he and Elliot Spitzer get their statistics right. They said $90 billion was given by this administration this year for renewable energy. They're considering clean coal, natural hydrofracking, gas hydrofracking, and nuclear as clean energies. A small percentage is given to solar, nothing to geothermal, nothing to wave power, and yet that is the single greatest opportunity because of the constant waves in the oceans to power enormous amounts, and even offshore with wind turbines that would not be aesthetically or in any way environmentally contributing to the degradation of a small community, which it will do, and which I'm opposed to the use of these. But even in the East River, we have turbines that are based upon waves that are creating electricity. None of that is being subsidized. And I believe that we should be looking at these. So hopefully someone will send a copy of this program today from our archives to Elliot Spitzer, along with a copy of Knocking on the Devil's Door, where Professor Carl Grossman and Harvey Wasserman and Vandana Shiva and Michio Kaku and Helen Collicott and so many others are in it. And to show him the other side of the story, because he is such an extraordinarily fearless fighter for truth, but this is one of those elements where we share a difference of opinion without in any way disrespecting his overall effort. But boy, if he could look at the evidence that you have, that we have, and then at least be open that if he finds that our evidence is compelling enough to shift his consciousness, that would be a major effort on our behalf, helping the whole movement. So, Carl, thank you. One quick last thing, if you could make it very quick. Many of us are very concerned about the remaining building, number 4, at Fukushima, and that how many spent fuel rods are in there, the condition of those, the building, and the fact that as little as a 5-point earthquake in the immediate vicinity could cause that building to crash, in which case there could be an extraordinary, devastating release of radiation, the most ever in civilized history, that would dwarf like 69 Chernobyls and make Japan virtually uninhabitable, but many other areas uninhabitable as well. Your last quick thoughts on that, and why don't we have a national, worldwide movement to get the best and brightest brains in the field to go in there and help the Japanese, because we're all going to be affected if this goes down.
Absolutely correct. I mean, the ongoing, it's continuing Fukushima catastrophe is gargantuan. If there is a problem in Unit 4, it's in a very precarious situation these days. Words can't describe the consequences.
Then we should ask our legislators, we should ask the American media, if nothing else, the worst single environmental event in history of civilization, I'm not talking about pre-civilization, would occur if that building 4 goes down, and yet not a word of it at the G8 summit, not a word of it in the major media, not a word of it yesterday on the Talking Heads programs. It's as if it doesn't exist anywhere in the campaign, yet it is the sword of Damocles, and we have to pay attention to it. So let's call out the reporters. Call out CNN and the other reporters saying, why is it that Professor Carl Grossman and Professor Michio Kaku and Professor Helen Collicott and and all the others are talking about Unit 4. Why aren't you talking about it? Don't you know about it? Then call them. Bring them on. Debate them. We'd love to debate. We have 20 people more than qualified to debate any issue involving nuclear. But they're making the issue invisible. And so we need to make this an issue. Carl, we'll send people your way if we can get the media interested in it. And thanks a lot for being out there for us.
A pleasure always, Gary.
Professor Carl Grossman, our newsmaker guest today. Now, before we go to our phones and your calls and Luann Panessi, who's standing by, here is our issue of the day. This is from the National Lawyers Guild and from Nation of Change. Let me quote this. The National Lawyers Guild condemns preemptive police raids and unlawful searches. Preemptive police raids? You mean like in the 2002 Tom Hanks film, where or Tom Cruise film? Yeah. Now, what was the name of that film? Minority Report, where they had someone who had not yet committed a crime, but they knew he was going to career, she was going to commit a crime, so they'd arrest him in advance. That's actually happened today. Let me quote this. The National Lawyers Guild condemns a preemptive police raid that took place at approximately 11:30 p.m. Wednesday in the Bridgeport neighborhood and instances of harassment on the street in which Chicago police are unlawfully detaining, searching, and questioning NATO protesters. The Bridgeport raid was apparently conducted by the Organized Crime Division of the Chicago Police Department and resulted in many arrests. According to witnesses, police broke down a door to access a six-unit apartment building, and without a search warrant, police entered an apartment with guns drawn and tackled one of the tenants to the floor, but none of these people had done anything wrong. They were handcuffed, held for more than 2 hours. Police searched the apartment, again, with no police search warrant, and the tenants were called commie faggots. Now, what does that mean? A search warrant produced 4 hours after the police broke into the apartment was missing a judge's signature. And, quote, preemptive raids like this are a hallmark of the national special security events, said Sarah Gelsomanio of the National Lawyers Guild and the People's Law Office. The Chicago police and other law enforcement agencies should be aware that this behavior will not be tolerated and will result in real consequences for the city. And then there was another instance where three plain police officers unlawfully stopped, handcuffed, and searched a protester just walking down the street at 2 p.m. And he did not consent to be searched, and there was no probable cause to detain him. But the police photographed him, questioned him, interrogated him, and asked him, "What are you doing in Chicago? How long have you been here? What do you intend to do? Where are you staying? Who are you with? How long have you planned to be in this Chicago?" This is going on and for protesters everywhere. Why isn't this front page story? Why aren't we talking about this? Why isn't this a national debate? We can understand people not knowing about something, not discussing it, but surely we have enough people who do know that this should be an important point, because if they're willing to stop people on their way to a protest who haven't even got to the protest and harass them, arrest them, handcuff, photograph them, interrogate them without due process, this is part of that NDAA. This is a part of the executive order. This is a part of becoming a totalitarian state. This is what this means. This is shameful, absolutely shameful. Because then when do you talking over the telephone or on your computer about what you're against or what you're opposed suddenly becomes qualification for preemptive arrest, detention, interrogation? It's already happening. The National Lawyers Guild, to their credit, have spoken up. We, the American public, have not. Let's hear what you have to say. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Nall. Time now for Talkback, that part of our program dealing with social and important issues, and a quick environmental update here. I'm not going to do the whole program article. It's up on our website. We put, by the way, more than 100 original progressive-themed articles every day, 24 hours a day, up on our website, and documentaries, so that you can be up to date on everything that's important in the worlds of health and environment and social issues. and most importantly, positive solutions. They are not ideologically based. I don't have any political interest, so we're not supporting or condemning one political party or religious group or anything else. It's just about things that need to be addressed in a constructive way. We're going to go to a break, but first this. This is from Ellen Canitro from the environmental nightmare you know nothing about, how rural America got fracked. I'll quote just two pages here. If the world can be seen in a grain of sand, watch out. As Wisconsinites are learning, there's money and misery in sand. And if you've got the right kind, an oil company may soon be at your doorstep. March in Wisconsin used to mean snow on the ground, temperatures so cold that farmers worried about their cows freezing to death. But as I traveled around rural townships and villages in early March to interview people about frac sand mining, a little-known cousin of hydrofracking or fracking, daytime temperatures were about 80 degrees. Yet this peaceful rural landscape is swiftly becoming part of a vast assembly line in the corporate race for the last fossil fuels on the planet. The target, the sand in the land of the cranes. 500 million years ago, an ocean surged here, shaping a unique wealth of hills and bluffs that under mantles of greenery and trees are sandstone. That sandstone contains a particularly pure form of crystalline silica. Its grains, perfectly rounded, are strong enough to resist the extreme pressures of the technology called hydraulic fracturing, which pumps vast quantities of that sand as well as water and chemicals into ancient shale formations to force out methane and other forms of natural gas. That sand, which props open fractures in the shale, has to come from somewhere. Without it, the fracking industry would grind to a halt. So big multinational corporations are descending on this bucolic region to cart off its prehistoric sand, which will later be forcefully injected into the earth elsewhere across the country to produce more natural gas. Geology that has taken millions of years to form is now being transformed into part of a system, a machine, helping to drive global climate change. Boom times for hydraulic fracturing began in 2008 when new horizontal drilling methods transformed an industry formerly dependent on strictly vertical boring. Fracturing sand took off in tandem with this development. It's huge, said the U.S. Geological Survey mineral commodity specialist. I've never seen anything like it. It's growth. It makes my head spin. That year, the U.S. fracked about 6.5 metric tons. Just Wisconsin this year will do about five times that. And then there's Jerry Losted, a retired teacher and a farmer. Took me out to show me the ridges, the beautiful hills. Not now. Now they're strip mined. Now it's all destroyed. And all over Wisconsin, they're destroying everything. Everything that had taken millions of years. And then he gives a story about Jamie and Kevin Greiger, both 30-something, native Wisconsinites and military veterans, lived in a trailer and saved their money so they could settle down in a pastoral paradise. And then they bought their property only to find out that next day, hydrofracking people showed up and their value of their land plummeted. And now they can't sell. And now they're stuck. And that's happening all over Wisconsin. Let's say hello now to Nick from Seacliff. Hi, Nick, your turn.
Hey, Gary, how are you, sir?
Doing great, thank you.
Gary, you know, I'm retired law enforcement. I got to tell you, you know, you're so on the money because, like the nuclear industry and so many other industries, we are crisis reactive. We will wait until there's some catastrophic event, and then the finger pointing will all start, okay? And then who the blame game and the shoulda, coulda, wouldas when it's too late. See? And you're touching now on a subject that can be catastrophic, especially Indian Point, as you pointed out in your film. And now let's see what our illustrious governor, how he's going to decide to go with the moratorium on fracking or to allow it. This should be very interesting.
Thank you for your call, Nick. I appreciate it. And yes, I'm glad that you are awake and you are protesting. And for all of you who showed up from this audience, this radio show, to stand with us arm in arm in front with many groups, at least 20 groups, small grassroots groups, and NYPIRG in front of Indian Point and lay claim to the idea that it's not their land, it's our health, our state, they don't own it. and say, no, close down Indian Point. We have other resources we could use immediately. Let's go into our studio and say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Was powerful information, and it's pathetic that we're not hearing this on any of the media, the right or the left. I have a letter here from Linda from Long Island.
Some of the left shows are dealing with this, but not enough of them. Yes, go ahead.
Well, yeah, but it's not. They're not looking at it in a comprehensive way, not the way you're addressing it with your guests, from every different angle, so we really get a feel for what's really going on instead of the entertainment segment of left news. So Linda from Long Island writes in. She says, I used to listen to WBAI in the 70s and 80s, and she moved to Northern California. And she's been back for the last 2 years listening, and a good friend of hers works in a radio rating company. And she said that she's noticed that there's pretty much the same people on the right, the Sean Hannitys, the Bill O'Reillys and such. And on the left was Keith Olbermann, Rachel Maddow, Amy Goodman, Tom Hartman. But what she's found is that there are more people downloading your programs, more than all of them, which she found very significant considering you're not on a national station. She also mentioned that the current issue of Vanity Fair has an article on celebrities who had a huge audience and it began to dwindle. People like Howard Stern, Oprah Winfrey, and again, Keith Olbermann. And how they had huge, huge audiences, and because of, you know, a number of circumstances and bad decisions, their audiences declined. And yet, she says, since 1976, you have never, ever been out of the top position in radio. I don't know that a lot of people know that.
Okay, and her question is?
Well, she just wanted to let you know that, and she asked you to comment on it.
All right.
How is it possible for you to stay on top of your game at the top position, given the fact that you're not on any major station, and you're on a listener-sponsored radio station? How is it possible?
Well, there's two assumptions. The first is that the only legitimate media are those that are the official or corporate-backed media, left or right, like NPR or PBS or any of the other stations. That's not true. In point of fact, most people today, especially younger people today, or people who want to think independently, don't have someone preach to them today of what is right or wrong. These are people who are not finding what they want in the mainstream media. Hence, they're looking in alternative places. So that's why the vast majority of people today are unhappy with the media, all the media, and are banning it in droves. Young people say they don't watch television very often. They don't read newspapers hardly ever, or magazines hardly ever. They're an internet information focused group. So provide that information that they need in the form that they can use, and if they find that it's of value, they'll pay attention to you. That's what we've been doing for some time. Secondly, people might forget that I was on ABC for 12 years and the number one show. No one has exceeded my ratings before or after that on Sunday nights. It was number one listened to radio show in America, but I never asked for publicity. When Mark Mason, a wonderful program director, when he said, you know, we got this person wants to interview, and I said, no, I'm sorry, I don't want anything. Why not? I said, because at some point you have to realize, why are you doing this? Are you on the air to serve your needs, ego needs, financial needs, career needs, or are you here to help people? And I believe that you have a different relationship when people realize you're there to help them, not yourself. And that's an important factor, because people are extremely intuitive and people are very sensitive. So when you're able to be in alignment with them, when you're in synchronicity, when you're dealing with things and talking in a language they understand on issues, that if they were in the same position, they might say, and you're not thinking about the consequences to you, then they align. Then you create just not a listenership, you create a friendship. And I believe that a lot of people like Rush Limbaugh, who has a very large audience, but look what he talks about all day long. He's just one angry, bitter person talking with other angry, bitter people. Sean Hannity, angry and bitter. The whole world's a problem because of the liberal progressives. And then you listen on the left, and frequently, like Keith Urban, angry and bitter, though he was doing highly articulated commentaries when it was against Bush, but he hadn't done the same thing against Obama or the administration. In fact, even having those people on providing Nancy Pelosi and other people were part of the problem, a form which showed where he really was in alignment. And then you look, these people, you know, I remember seeing Keith Urban down at Occupy. This is after the people from BAI, like Tony Bates and others, who had gone down there for legitimate reasons, you know, to find out what's the message, how can we help, how can we give a forum. And but here's Keith walking through the crowd like, I'm here, I'm here. And a lot of celebrities were down there, I'm here, as if that was, you know, the big issue. But it took almost a month and a half before he got down there. And then he did some shows on it, but because he felt that that would be an audience, missed the audience, and end up losing a lot of listeners and finally lost his job. People understand when you're authentic and when you're there for yourself. And a lot of people in the media have audiences, but you look at the larger audience in America and compare that larger audience in America to the amount of audience they have at any given time, and it's tiny. It's infinitesimal. The fact is that CNN, MSNBC, Current, Link, PBS, NPR, Fox, they're all losing their base of support, all of them. Now, if they had a large base to begin with, they'll take longer to lose it. But I'll tell you what they're not getting. They're not getting young, meaning teen, 20, 30-year-olds who really are interested in the important issues. They're not getting the critical thinking older generation. So you look at what a person's position is, and almost daily you can know who's going to be on, what they're going to talk about. And Rush Limbaugh can bloviate for 3 hours about nothing. Nothing is relevant to us. And it's all negative. And then you start realizing, do I have anything that empowered me during this hour? Is there any information that allows me to see the world in a different way? Am I going to be happier and healthier? Am I going to have solutions? Am I going to be forewarned? Am I going to be ahead of that situation if I want to be ahead of it? And the answer is no. So then what is the purpose of this? What they don't realize, that they're becoming antiquated. And in the media today, if you're not fully connected with an authentic mission, and if you're not really clear on who you are and what you're able to share and align yourself with those people who say, this will help us, then you will lose your audience. And then one day when Oprah is no longer on the networks and hence the official media, but she has $1 billion or $2 billion and can do anything she wants, and she starts her own network, but it's not official network anymore, it's cable, and she loses 90% of her audience and $400 million in the process, and blows out a very talented Rosie O'Donnell in the process. Or Howard Stern, it had 13 million people and then went over to Sirius and ended up with about 2 million. These people don't understand human nature. They're successful. You don't have to worry about their money. They'll find something that'll keep them up there. And Rush Limbaugh, you know, if he lost all the sponsors today, they'll finally dump him. And but it'll take a long time to do it, and he'll have $500 million in the bank that he can, you know, go on the talk circuit. But they lost the authentic connection to the audience. And once you lose that, you'll never get it back.
Well,
so better understand what we should be doing in the media. We should be here first and foremost to honor the audience, not ourselves. And if it's only about ourselves and ego, then expect a trajectory down as quickly as it was up. And if it's there, if you're there, as many people are, because you care about people, and there are people who definitely care. In my opinion, you don't get any better than Barry Farber. And he is a mensch. He's a phenomenal human being. And then you ask, how's he been around so long? Because he's likable, because he's authentic, because he empowers people, and because he's just a decent person. His body politic is really irrelevant. He's conservative, but that's irrelevant. And then you got to like, you know, what's there to like about Rush Limbaugh and these people? They're arrogant, they're headstrong, they're negative, they're toxic, and all they can do is make their careers and their power and their position by attacking other people nonstop. Well, how in the world is that sustainable? Where is there anything humanistic, spiritual in that? There isn't. So it tells me as much about who's listening to them, who's watching them, than it is about them. So what it means is you've got about 3 to 13 million people, depending upon who you're talking about, from Bill O'Reilly to Rush Limbaugh, who are not going to be a part of any solutions to anything in the world. They're not going to be out there demonstrating. They're not going to be making it a better world. They're going to be in denial and like true believers. So, but that is a small number compared to the 315 million people live in America. Does that answer the question?
Well, it does. And interestingly, the Vanity Fair article never even addressed the cause of their fall from power, but they sensationalized the fact that they went from being powerful and rich to, you know, minimizing their audience. And I've been in stores or places where people are listening to Rush Limbaugh, and essentially what it sounds like he's doing is he's trying to incite anger in people, but it's anger for the wrong reasons. It makes them just aggressive and nasty and bitter, just like him, instead of being angry for the right reasons, like Fukushima, like Indian Point, like vaccines. Instead of being angry for the right reasons and letting that anger work for you, these people are just, it seems like they're just inciting anger in people so they can justify their anger without solutions.
Well, look at it a little different way. That's a good insight, Luann. Thank you for that. But final thought before we leave today. What if Rush Limbaugh or Glenn Beck or Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity or Laura Ingraham or any of the people, the big people on the left, took their entire audience or as many as they could get and protested at Indian Point and protested hydrofracking and protested, you would have a national movement. But it hasn't happened. And that's the bad part, because at the end of the day, you see what their real interest is and you see what their alignment is for. You got to be able to use the audience's energy in a way that allows the audience to feel free, empowered, and positive for the solutions. And if you're not giving that, then you are absolutely going to be looking with insecurity at every day in the ratings instead of looking at what can be done and freeing people and liberating people in the process. So we've got a lot of the wrong people on the right and left in positions of power. And unfortunately, they're not even able to use the power they have to build a better world, but only to tear down the world that they're in. Thanks for your call. I'm out of time. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more. And tonight, 7 p.m., a powerful hour, the Progressive Commentary Hour tonight. You won't want to miss that. Have a nice day, everyone.